Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's done. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's done. He's done. Touchdown, Washington Redskins. Woo-hoo.
Kick up. Kick is on the way.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up, throws. Touchdown!
The rush. Gonna be hit. Gonna be sacked. No, we got out of it. Now he fires downfield. And it is caught. Caught at the 24-yard line. How in the world did he do that?
Good evening, all, and welcome into another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Frat House, my company here. Hey, it is the middle of November, and it's feeling like it. It's looking like it, and it's feeling like it. And just like that, 10 weeks are gone. And, you know, it's interesting because we've got – it was one of those kinds of weeks in the NFL where it seemed like, yeah, we still have some – I mean, you still have the surprises that are sitting out there. Surprises like the Los Angeles Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles who were on bye this past week. So those kinds of surprises are still sitting out there. But like I've kind of been saying for the past couple of weeks, things are starting to come a little bit more into focus. We're going to take a look at where things stand, I guess, all across the NFL as we're now just 7 games remaining in the entire season for almost all the teams. This is the last bye week of the NFL season, week 11, so all of the teams remaining now at this point all have basically the same number of games in their record because the final 4 teams will be on bye come week 11. So getting the byes out of the way, and now we're into the meat of the really almost the conclusion. Now, kind of, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we heard it here in the Philadelphia region, you know, head coach last week, Doug Peterson for the Philadelphia Eagles, as their bye week was commencing, saying, well, you know, coming back now in the second half of the season. And that's really what it kind of feels like. It feels like we're even past the halfway point, and we're now into that kind of area. I mean, look, we're just a week away now from Thanksgiving. By the time you get to Thanksgiving, well, it's, you know, you're really starting to seriously look at playoff situations. And so we'll be taking a look at a couple of situations where, you know, hey, obviously a lot of things can change. 7 games is still a lot of football to be played, make no mistake. But nonetheless, 10 games in, 9 games in, you're starting to really get the feel of the flow of where things are going to be shaking down perhaps by the end of the season and where the playoffs are going to be looking. A team that you cannot discount out of all of that, the New Orleans Saints, now having won 7 games in a row. They started out the season 0-2. They are currently 7-2. And while myself included, a lot of people out there early on in the season saying, well, Listen, you know, look, let's get it straight. Drew Brees is getting up there. Well, this might be the New Orleans Saints' last stand as we know them right now. I don't know. Not anymore. 7-2 now. Winners of 7 in a row. And in this past week, oh, holy smokes, they put a whooping on the Buffalo Bills. They did that one in grand style. We'll be taking a look at that game this evening because you certainly have to be talking about the New Orleans Saints as not just a playoff contender, but could, in fact, they be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl. Holy smokes. The Pittsburgh Steelers, well, they won their 7th game of the season. They take their record to 7-2. But for anybody that peeked in on that game or perhaps had to sit through a good deal of it this past Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts, I got to tell you something. That was a game that, in my opinion, the Pittsburgh Steelers really struggled with. And when you're talking about week 9, week 10 of the NFL season, and you see a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers struggling, you start to wonder, are they really all that? Because really, when it comes right down to it, the two teams you keep hearing to be the cream of the AFC, Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots. Yeah, you got to wonder now, was that just a one blip, one game situation? Hey, they did beat the Colts. They did beat them. This wasn't pretty, was it? Meanwhile, the Minnesota Vikings, it doesn't seem to matter whether it's pretty or not. They just somehow or another seemingly keep winning. They got their 7th win of the season. Take their record to 7-2. Case Keenum, yeah. Case Keenum, he had himself a 4-touchdown career day. Was that a blip? You can't say it was a blip. Not with the Minnesota Vikings. Not this year. Incredible. We'll take a look at the Minnesota Vikings. And the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys. How about the Dallas Cowboys? It seemed everything the pundits were saying, well, they almost allowed it to kind of manifest itself into becoming true, didn't they now? There were a lot of people that said, hey, this is a one-man team. Dak Prescott isn't all of that. It's Zeke Elliott's team. That's what this really is. And I got to tell you something, without Zeke Elliott, man alive, the Dallas Cowboys looked like a very, very, very different team, didn't they now? And so you got to wonder, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy where, in fact, they truly are a one-man team? We'll take a look at the Atlanta Falcons. We'll take a look at the Dallas Cowboys. Both those teams 5-4, but the Dallas Cowboys on a 20-point difference in a game against the Falcons. And then last but not least, we had Happy Cam last night. I'm talking about Cam Newton. Happy Cam was on Monday Night Football. Yeah, 45-21, the Carolina Panthers, they just completely dismantled the Miami Dolphins. I don't know how the Miami Dolphins got 3 touchdowns, to be perfectly honest with you. One of those, I think, near the end, Jarvis Landry picked up. That was basically, I believe, a garbage. I think you'd have to put that down as a garbage TD. But it was Happy Cam because, hey, they won. And, they're 7-3. And so certainly they've got themselves positioned for the playoffs as well. Somehow or another. So we'll touch on all of those and we'll get into taking a look just as we usually do here on a Tuesday night. It'll be a free-for-all. We'll just wrap it all around and try to drop as many names of as many different teams as we possibly can. That's the goal. I generally go into this each week. How many teams can we mention all 32 teams inside of a 90-minute show? We will try. If anybody wants to jump in with us and bring up a team that perhaps maybe we haven't mentioned, that would help. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Don't be shy. Give us a holler. Sure, bring up the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about them, although we probably will. They're playoff positioned. Bring up a team that we haven't brought up here this evening. The New York Jets. 347-826-9964. Or you can jump into our Blog Talk Radio chat room and leave us a message there. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at FratHouseMike. That's how you can find me on Twitter. Give me a follow. Give me a message. I'll bring it to the air. Or we can chat live right over Twitter. In the meantime, no, we did not have a program last week. But we do have one, obviously, this week. And joining me, as always, my sidekick on Tuesday nights, we got Brandon. Brandon, how are we doing tonight?
Oh, not too bad. How are you doing?
All right. I sat down and I took a look at – I was taking a look at each division, interestingly, this afternoon, and taking a look at it from the standpoint of if, in fact – the if in fact, you know, let's say last night was the very last game of the season, and we were now playoff bound where the standings are at this minute, is this pretty much perhaps maybe the way things will end up? And if we break it down, AFC and then NFC, in the AFC, and this is where I was saying, you know, leading into the conversation this evening, you know, we got 9 weeks in. All teams have 9 games now across their record. 10 weeks into the NFL season, things are starting to really kind of settle, really settle down now. I mean, you know, the cream is starting to rise to the top. We have a pretty good handle on what that is. And then we've got our mid-pack teams that are pretty much going to be vying for those wild card spots. And then we know who the the cellar dwellers are. And it's pretty much now, so what, you know, you start to wonder, is this pretty much what we can expect? In the AFC, your division winners would be, if the season concluded right now, the New England Patriots in the East, the Pittsburgh Steelers in the North, Tennessee Titans in the South, and the Kansas City Chiefs in the West. That seems pretty normal. That seems perhaps maybe the way it, I don't want to say should be, but I mean, for want of a better word, yeah, that's probably the way it should be. Wildcard teams would be the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Buffalo Bills. You got some, you got two interesting wildcard options there, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. The AFC is a little, you know, more kind of set in stone, I guess, than, you know, the NFC. The NFC is kind of up in the air a little bit. I mean, the Eagles are clearly out in front, but I mean, you got a lot of 7-2 teams. Really, there's only 2 7-2 teams in the AFC, and that's the Patriots and the Steelers. And they'll settle that up on week 15 when they play head to head. So we should have a pretty clear picture by then of who's going to be seated where. I mean, you got a couple teams at 6-3. I mean, the Chiefs and the Titans, they haven't been looking all that stout lately, in my opinion. I think they both have teams that have shown some weakness. But, you know, when you go to the next level down for the wild cards, wow, there's a lot of
mediocrity.
I mean, technically, yeah, technically right now, a team with a losing record would be your wild card team. I mean, you got the Jacksonville Jaguars at 6-3, and then all your other wild card contenders are at least at, okay, Buffalo would be 5-4, so I guess they would still be winning.
Yeah,
but then you got a lot of teams at 4-5 right in there that are just, you know, like you said, mediocrity. I mean, I don't think the Raiders are done yet. I think the Broncos are done. I think you can stick a fork in them. They're probably done. I think the Texans lost their swagger when they lost to Deshaun Watson. You know, the Chargers never were contenders in my book. So that leaves you the Raiders, the Jaguars, maybe the Ravens if they can catch some, you know, catch some momentum. They're not out of it, but they haven't done much recently. You know, they had to buy, maybe they got Flacco healthy. Let's see how he can come back. You know, Buffalo, they're in pretty good shape. You know, Miami's at 4-5, but they're a bad 4-5. So are the Jets. They have, neither one of those teams have done anything to impress me all year, which is normal. And, you know, I don't want my Patriot bias to come out, but you know, they've been pretty awful franchises for a while. I don't see that changing very often, very soon.
Yeah, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, what would get a team into the playoffs? You know, like a team like the Baltimore Ravens, and you look at them right now and they're 4-5. You know, what would it take for a Baltimore Ravens team to make it into the playoffs as a wild card. You would have to think it would have to be 9-7, right? I mean, because if you've got Jacksonville already at 6-3, and we still have seven games remaining, you would have to think 9-7 might get a team in deep.
9-7 or 8-8. I mean, the Bills are at 5-4. I mean, 8-8, probably not out of the realm yet, to be honest. And that's pretty sad, but, you know, that's the way it is in today's NFL sometimes.
Yeah, and at 8-8, Baltimore would have to go 4-3 in their final seven, which isn't impossible to do. Yeah,
not at all, because they probably have games against the Cleveland Browns and Cincinnati left, which are very winnable games. You know, I don't know their schedule off the top of my head, but you know, I'm thinking they're probably in fairly decent shape when it comes to matchups. So, you know,
They've only played three division games, so that means that they have three division games remaining of those seven. So three of them are division games, and assuming that one of them might be Pittsburgh, the other two, you got Cincinnati and Cleveland perhaps in there. So, and again, like you, I don't have the schedule directly in front of me, but so
yeah,
I mean, two winnable games.
I would think the Steelers have, you know, or the Ravens still have a shot. I mean, the Steelers, when they do have to play them, that's going to be a tough game for them. It always is. It's a division game. You know, we've seen, you know, division games generally are tough, you know, no matter who they are. But I mean, let's face it, the Bengals and the Browns are the Bengals and the Browns right now, you know, and they probably get the Ravens will probably get a little favorable matchups there.
Mm-hmm. I think of the teams that we look at that are in, you know, and as you pointed out, the AFC, I guess there's nothing here that's necessarily making anybody's head turn here coming out of the AFC. The AFC looks pretty stable, looks pretty normal, I guess, by standards that we've come to expect from the AFC. So nothing here that's necessarily earth-shattering, except I would say I'm a little bit surprised that we could be sitting here in mid-November and saying, and I concur with you, that we would be sitting here in mid-November and saying, more than likely, the Denver Broncos are probably done. That's a little bit surprising. Look, I know that they've had their issues with, you know, the revolving quarterback situation, and I really never kind of thought that Trevor Siemian was going to be all that. But man alive, Brandon, their defense has just almost— it's almost broken down at this point.
It's almost gotten old in a hurry. You know what I mean?
Yep, old in
you
a
know
hurry
what I mean?
Is
like,
right.
Because they have a lot of veteran guys on that team, and, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing Aqib Talib getting beat. You're seeing, you know, Von Miller have to go into coverage instead of rushing the passer. You know, there's issues on that side of the ball for the Broncos. You know, I don't know if it's injuries. I haven't been following it real close to say if it's an injury situation or not, but, you know, when they got probably one of the best two or three pass rushers in the league and Von Miller, you know, in coverage trying to chase down a running back, good luck. You know, I mean, that's just not his forte. You know, you're wasting his ability by, you know, doing that. And that happened a couple times in that game. You know, he's chasing down Burkhead. He was chasing down James White. You know, it's just, you know, those are matchups that are not good for Von Miller. I mean, these little guys are making them, you know, making the bigger guy look a little foolish.
Look bad. So. Yeah, look bad is right.
Well, you know, and like they were saying on TV, I mean, you know, that's not his strength. His strength is rushing that passer. And Tom Brady basically stood there all game. I mean, they never had any real pressure on Tom Brady that, you know, sustained pressure. You know, they might have had a snap or two here and there where they just didn't have, you know, where they, you know, made him hurry or something. He didn't get what he wanted. But, I mean, there were very few. I mean, the Patriots had that game in total control the whole game.
And therein, I think, you come away with a somewhat surprising look at the Denver Broncos defense. Because that's something we're not used to seeing from this Broncos team, is a quarterback, particularly one like Brady, being able to stand back, or, you know, a 40-year-old immobile quarterback, just standing back there Brandon, what? I mean, there were times he was standing back there, it felt like for like 6-7 seconds.
Yep.
I mean,
had,
honestly,
you know, he had no issues with pass rush to worry about. He wasn't getting beat up. He was basically in control. The Patriots were doing what they wanted pretty much in the pass game or the run game. You know, they didn't run the ball. They didn't have like a sustained run game, but when they did run, they were able to get first downs. And, you know, he threw it all around to just about everybody on the roster. I mean, the new tight end, Martellus Bennett, into town, who was ruled out when he was a Packer for this week, goes to New England, you know, has 3 or 4 catches and a touchdown.
Yes.
Dwayne Allen, the third tight end, has a touchdown.
Yep.
I believe Rob Gronkowski had a touchdown. You know, James White and Burkett both had touchdowns. Maybe I'm wrong on Gronk. I'm not sure.
Gronk, I don't
have
think
to double
did.
Check. Yeah.
Gronk had that controversial one pulled back.
He had, he had a couple. Yeah, right. That was that's right. He had that one. They didn't. Yeah, they reviewed. Anyway, he you know, he had a couple, you know, good, you know, Gronkowski type catches and, you know, be the bull down the field kind of thing. But, you know,
but you're making a great point. Brady had so much time back there. He was able to check down to his second and third receiver. I mean, that's just, you know, with due respect, and I, and look, I don't want to, I'm not bringing it up to stress his age or anything, but when you've got a 40-year-old immobile quarterback, you don't want to give, particularly Tom Brady, let's get this straight, you don't want to give him that kind of time. That's just that's ridiculous. But the
well,
mere fact
here's
that
the best
he
part.
Doesn't move around, the fact that he doesn't move around that much, all the more, I think, all the more glaring were the defensive lacks on that side of the ball. Go ahead.
Well, here's the best part. He's doing that with, you know, all these receivers, and he, one of his best receivers, you know, wasn't in the game. Chris Hogan was out, you know, and they essentially put James White in as a receiver. 90% of the time he was on the field, he was lining up wide, you know, as a wide receiver. I mean, so you have a running back who's going out there, you know, and playing receiver. That's pretty impressive. You know, they can, you know, float it around. They have, you know, Brandon Cooks and Philip Dorsett and Amendola, but, you know, I think Hogan's kind of their number one receiver as a wide receiver position. Maybe Cooks, him or Cooks. They're the two main guys. You know, the other two are the slot guys. You know, they kind of rotate, you know, but so, you know, they were missing a pretty good piece. They were missing, you know, one or two of their wide receiver, whatever, you know, position you want to put him on the depth chart. You know, they were missing that guy and they still went out there and they look good. I mean, as bad as they look the start of the season, you know, they're just coming into, you know, as a Patriots fan myself, this is what you want to see them starting to hit their groove this time of year. You know, get some momentum going. I mean, I think they started 2-2 and they've gone 5-0 since. So, you know, they got the momentum going in the with the win streak. And then, you know, as you pointed out, there's only 7 weeks left. So now they're just like, okay, let's see if we can get, you know, everybody who's missing healthy. And, you know, maybe we'll coerce Rob Ninkovich out of retirement for the playoff run. Who knows? I still ain't giving that up yet. I mean, I was reading the pros and cons of it. You know, for him, you know, he's not going to get a lot of money and, you know, he's pretty healthy. He's not had any major injuries. You know, I think he missed one game in his whole career due to injury. Do you really want to risk that in today's world of, you know, concussions and CTE? Is that something you want to push at this point? I would probably say no.
I'm actually surprised it's still a conversation because I think, there seemed to be a little more urgency for it a couple of weeks ago than there is now, wasn't there?
Yeah, but I just read an article last week about it where they were talking to him about it again, you know, and you know that was pretty much his response. He's like, I'm not going to 100% shut the door, but at this point, it really doesn't make much sense.
I was going to say if they're feeling that they can keep going back to him, they must think he's on the fence.
Well, I don't know if it's New England going back to him or if it's the media going to him, you know, putting 1 + 1 together to get 2. You know, the Patriots have had some issues on the, you know, defensive side of the ball this year. And, you know, they've had injuries at the linebacker position, you know, and having somebody who knows the system and can come right in and be effective. You know, it's not like he was ineffective last year in the last year of his play, you know, so. you know, mm-hmm. I think that's why the question keeps getting asked. You know, it's logic. You know what I mean? It's yep. it's the kind of thing you've seen from this franchise before, where the players are very loyal. You know, and
family, family.
Yeah,
it's almost a family thing. Yeah.
And Ninkovich would be a guy that falls into that kind of deal. You know, I wouldn't have thought Martellus Bennett was based on him only being there for a year, but he seemed to got welcomed back with open arms from everybody in the franchise last week. So, you know, so much for my thought on that. I'll be honest with you. When the Packers cut him, I did not see the Patriots claiming him on waivers because, you know, they had an opportunity to give him that kind of contract, you know, that the Packers gave him. And granted, a lot of that bonus money was already paid by the Packers. And, I would imagine at least some of that high salary for the next two seasons is guaranteed. And now the Patriots are on the hook for that. So, you know, I was a little shocked, to be honest with you, about that them picking him up. So, not saying it's a bad thing. I just, you know.
No.
Everything you're reading, he needs some kind of shoulder surgery. You know, he signed this big, you know, contract in the offseason, you know, that the Patriots, you know, could have offered him something similar if they wanted him that bad. You know, and then they go and pick up the other team's contract. Now, granted, the Packers did give him like $6 million in bonus money at the start of the year that they're not getting back because, you know, they waived him. So they have no claim to that, you know, and the Patriots, I think they get Bennett for, you know, a couple hundred thousand for this year, you know, based on his, you know, season one contract, but they do got year two and three of that contract he signed. And like I said, I don't know if there was any bonus, you know, or any guaranteed money in it or not, but you know,
that was, I would venture a bet, a lot of it. And I would bet it was front loaded.
Oh, absolutely front loaded. It was,
yeah.
The Packers gave him a 6 point something
yep.
million signing bonus.
Well, that's
bonus.
My point. So,
and this season was low in relationship and contract. Mm-hmm. And there is a $5 million roster bonus next year with a relatively low, like a $2 or $3 million base salary for next season. So, you know, depending on how much of that, if any of it's guaranteed, will determine if they pick up that roster bonus in May or March or whenever it's due. And we'll see if he's still on the team next year.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
You know, from the sounds of it, I do believe, though, Martellus Bennett was making retirement overtones towards at the end of the season.
Exactly.
That
that's
led
what
to
I was,
some of
that's,
that.
Right. That's yeah. what I was thinking as well. So, you know, that's why I'm saying I think, you know, I would imagine that a lot of that money from Green Bay was all front loaded, but you're saying, okay, well, yeah, $5 million roster bonus, but that was probably, you know, that might have even been Green Bay saying, well, he may not, you know, we may not keep him on the team, or he may not be coming back the year after, you know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm. I'm just surprised the way Green Bay handled it based on how much bonus money they gave him straight out of the box.
When you make that kind of
investment.
Yeah, I don't know if we're getting the whole story on it.
Okay? I don't think we are. You know,
because
heard the team doctor being placed in a, you know, bad light, and then half the team came out to defend him. It seemed very orchestrated, you know, the little back and forth in the media. So there may have been more to this story than we know.
Yeah, I had drafted Martellus Bennett for my fantasy team. On draft day, I drafted him.
Mm-hmm.
And I dumped him. I cut him 1 week before Green Bay did because I had it carrying him on the team. He was not getting targeted at all. And so I'm putting him
in the lineup. After Rodgers went out, he was somewhat effective prior to Rodgers going out, I believe. I think he had a couple touchdowns, you know. Maybe not, you know, a multiple touchdown game, but I didn't think he was totally ineffective when Rodgers was in there. Once Hundley came in, that pretty much, you know, I think that's part of what happened. You know, I don't think Martellus Bennett was looking to be on a team that had no chance to get a Super Bowl. You know, that, you know, that's kind of the way I look at that situation. He was looking to play for a contender from day one. He signed with, and Rodgers led the Packers team. And then once Rodgers is gone, the playoffs are looking pretty bleak for the Chargers.
I don't know. The best week he had was week 11, where he was targeted five times. Martellus Bennett has not had a touchdown all season long. He had
week 11 is this week. Week 11 was this week against the Patriots.
No, week two. What did I say? I meant week two.
Week 11.
Week two. It was week two where he had 11 targets. He had 43 yards. 43 yards week one, 47, 12 yards in week three, 39 yards in week four, 53 yards. I mean, it was just, you know, to me, I carried him the whole mid-season. And I was like, you know what? This is a wasted roster spot. I can do better than this. And I cut him a week before the Green Bay Packers did. It seemed to me that almost from the very beginning of the season, it almost looked to me, Brandon, like they didn't feel there was room for him. That's what it looked like to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it almost looks like, I'll give you that. He didn't look like a good fit in that offense for whatever reason. You know, you would think, we've seen other tight ends do well. Cook had to move on. Even Richard Rodgers, the other tight end they still have, he's looked okay at times. So, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't seem to mesh. Let's put it that way. The chemistry with the, you know, and it ended badly. So maybe there was contention, you know, on the coaching staff, or maybe there's just something they didn't like about the way he did things, whatever. But, you know, we've seen that before with players where they do real well on one team, go to another team, you know, do bad, go back to the team A, and then they're good again. You know, we saw this the very same thing with LeGarrette Blount. You know, he went to Pittsburgh, didn't do too well, got cut, went back to New England the same season and was a beast in the playoffs. So, you know, I don't know what LeGarrette Blount's doing in Philadelphia right now, but, you know, we'll see.
With the exception of 2 weeks, I would say, you know, they're using him on third down situations and not too much in the red zone.
Which is surprising because that's where he's a beast.
Well,
but
yeah, and now they've got Jay Ajayi. So, you know, as I pointed out 2 weeks ago, that's almost like having a second LeGarrette Blount, only younger. So I'm not quite sure what the thinking is, except long-term. I think, you know, I'm wondering whether the Eagles are looking long-term because is a one-year sign. He was a one-year sign right from the beginning. So was that the thinking all along? And then we fell into the Jay Ajayi situation mid-season at the trade deadline. You fall into that one, and now that addresses potentially a long-term problem for the future, and well, at least for the next couple of years. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But
What's his contract situation coming from Miami? Is he signed to that for another year or two, or is he
Ajayi
a free agent at the end of this year?
Is he in his third year or fourth year?
What round was he picked in? Was he a first or second round?
No, I don't think he was a first rounder. I'm almost positive.
Well, then
four years
is the end of his contract, so. He's probably a free agent.
He may have one more, or he may have. Let's see.
If he's a second round pick, they probably have an option year that they have to pick up on him. But if he's less than if he's third round or less, he's probably not under contract for next year.
Okay, I'm right. He's in his third year. He's in his third year, so there would be one more year, I believe, on his rookie contract.
Okay.
And where was he? He was, I don't think he was drafted because he came from, he did come from Boise. He was Boise State. That's right. He played at Boise State, but he's actually from England. He was born and raised in London, England.
Wow.
But he did play. But he did play for Boise State. Now I'm thinking though he was an undrafted. I was thinking he was undrafted.
Well, then his definitely on the 3 years is all they do for undrafted at best. So yeah, he's probably a free agent.
He might be up now. But anyhow, well, like I said, we'll see. We'll see how that plays out, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, somebody else who, you know, I drafted LeGarrette Blount too, you know, on my team. Now I haven't cut him yet. He's still on my team. I haven't cut
Notice
him
you
yet.
Say yet. That means it's under consideration.
Yeah. It is. It has been. Yes, it has been. But anyhow, over in the NFC, if we take a look at the NFC, just like we did the AFC here for a second, if we take a look at the NFC, if the season concluded today, as you pointed out, a little more interesting. Philadelphia Eagles would lead in the East, so they've got the East under control. Minnesota Vikings in the NFC North, New Orleans Saints in the South, and in the West, we got the LA Rams. Your wildcard teams would be the Seattle Seahawks and the Carolina Panthers. Now, when you take a look at the division winners, Brendan, I think in just about all of those, you might be able to say all of those, you could walk away going, wow, this NFC is very, very different looking from what
I think.
Perhaps
I think the Saints and the Rams for sure are shocking, because I was of the opinion you mentioned during your intro where a lot of people thought, you know, this was the last year, hurrah, maybe for Breeze and the Saints. And, well, they've kind of made us look kind of foolish. So they're 7-2. The Rams come out of nowhere for 7-2. I mean, I guess everybody, you know, if you're a Rams fan, you were hoping that, you know, all these young guys would start to mesh and Goff would turn out to be a, you know, worthy first round pick. And but nobody saw it coming. Not like this. Not 7-2. And they beat some teams pretty soundly, too.
They sure have. And the X factor to all of that was, in fact, Jared Goff, because the other parts of the machinery that seems to be all clicking together had been running with this team, but Goff was the only one that hadn't been. So Goff becomes the missing piece in all of that that has them all the way up at a 7-2 record. And as you point out, they've beaten up some pretty good teams. Yeah, New Orleans Saints. When you take a look at that NFC South, that could have been pretty much controlled by just about any of those teams. The Carolina Panthers, the Atlanta Falcons, certainly having gone to the Super Bowl last year, they could have been leading that division. You could have even thrown in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have now fallen all the way off to 3-6, and they look like pretenders for the 2017 season. Minnesota Vikings, there's another one that's a surprise. Of course, we've talked about this before, pretty much by circumstance with the Green Bay Packers out of there. Because I think all of us would probably say, well, listen, certainly Green Bay would be probably leading that division had it not been for Aaron Rodgers, you know, going down injured. Philadelphia Eagles, that should be the Dallas Cowboys. Wild card teams, as I pointed out, would be the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks. Now that, you know, a little more normal when you get then taking a look at, but almost every single team that's leading a division in the NFC, you could have potentially replaced with a different team in that same division when you were making your predictions at the beginning of the season before week one. Every one of those divisions.
Without a doubt.
Very, very different looking NFC
well, you
right
your
now.
The defending Super Bowl champions are sitting there 5-4, or NFC champions are sitting there 5-4, you know, and the Falcons, Cowboys are 5-4. So, you know, even Detroit's 5-4. There's a lot of teams sitting there in the wings waiting for, you know, one more loss or two more losses from some of these teams. And, you know, it's not unconceivable. I think you have a lot more realistic of a field coming out of the NFC than you do the AFC. I think the AFC is kind of set, really. There's not a whole lot of, you know, maybe the Ravens, you know what I mean? Where there's like four or five teams that could are vying for them two spots in the NFC, legitimately vying for them. You know, now obviously another week or two goes by, that number could go down to say three maybe or but whatever. I think the NFC's wildcard race may go to the end. I mean, just from what we've seen so far with the, you know, the NFC being a little in flux compared to some other years, different teams at the top. So I think some of them other teams, you know, that were more expected to be there, their opportunity is going to be coming from a wild card, if that. So, you know, I think you'll, I think that race is going to go pretty much to the end in my book.
Yep. Because you could certainly say that the Detroit Lions are in play. You can't still yet, you can't yet, as you point out, maybe another week or two, you can't yet, though, rule out the Green Bay Packers at 5-4. You point out the Atlanta Falcons. The Dallas Cowboys now, interesting situation. They got to go head-to-head against the Philadelphia Eagles this week, Sunday night. I think the Eagles go to Dallas to play that one. So that's going to be in Dallas on Sunday night. Now, if the Eagles come out of that a winner, and that now puts the Eagles four games in front of the – well, it would put them four games in front of every other team below them, because let's just say for a moment that the Washington Redskins were to win this week, that would put them at 5-5. Dallas would drop the 5-5. Philadelphia Eagles would move to 9-1. That would put them solidly four games in front. And at that point now, you almost have to start to say, oh, boy, you know, this is looking like you may not get any team out of the East at all, wouldn't you think?
Probably. I think it's hard to say. I mean, on paper, Dallas, you know, they should be able to make up for Ezekiel Elliott, you know.
You would think.
You know, with Morris and the other two guys they got, McFadden and the young guy, you would think, because that team's strength has always been, oh, well, they got the best line in football. They got this. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I was thinking before, you know, even during Sunday night when we were watching a game and they're hyping that up like they always do. I'm like, that's a win for the Eagles. Well, I think because Dallas looked so bad last week, I think that's going to put them back on their heels a little bit. It's going to give Dak Prescott, you know, a wake-up call maybe, and maybe the Eagles will have a harder game than they thought they were going to get out of this team. So, you know, it's a tough one to pick when we do our picks on Thursday. I don't know if this one's going to make it or not, but, you know, it's one of those, that's for sure. There you go.
Well, it's on the list. It's definitely on the list, and I think it probably will – be part of our mix of games to discuss, but because I'm actually looking at the list, and I don't know if there's a better game really all weekend that could have as much of an impact as that one. I think that I think that might be about the best game all week. But I'm just looking over the list again. Yeah, very, very interesting looking NFC, though. Very interesting. Really. I'm one that is constantly preaching parity. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I'm thrilled to see. I mean, I was going to say I'm thrilled to see Minnesota up there. Yeah, I'd like to see Minnesota up there. At full strength, I'd like to see Green Bay at full strength. I guess maybe that's one team that I would actually
prefer. Well, you may get a chance to see Minnesota at full strength. You know, they're saying Bridgewater's, you know, the backup. He's, you know, suiting up. He's active. You know, who knows? I mean, right now you can't knock Case Keenum. I mean, they're like five in a row or something under Case Keenum, or he has five wins as a starter maybe. I mean, you can't, you know, bash the job he's done, you know. And they even made a comment about it on one of the post game show or Sunday night, maybe pregame. They said, would you remove your hot hand? And most of the general consensus from all the football people was no, you know,
well,
give Bridgewater the time, you know.
Exactly right.
You're certainly not, you know, in any trouble right now with Keenum. So
I mean,
just play him.
That's the general rule. And let me just ask you, I mean, you're the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Would you do it? I'm not going to do it until my hand is forced.
Well, here's the thing.
Particularly under the circumstances. Look, I'm going
to
bring in a guy who just went through major surgery on his entire lower leg. You know, knee all the way down, okay? I'm going to put this guy back in. I'm going to insert him in. He hasn't been on the field in you know, a year and a half, okay? That's my option?
Here's how you evaluate that. Real simple. You watch him in practice. You see how effective he is. And then you need to make a decision. Do you trust Case Keenum in the playoffs, or do you think Bridgewater is a better playoff starter? Because, you know, let's face it, you're only going to go as far as your quarterback once you hit the playoffs, you know? So that's a decision the coaching staff needs to make, an evaluation that has to happen before, you know, the end of the year, especially now that you're getting down to it in crunch time. So, you know,
that presents an interesting question then. Because Minnesota's already had their bye, so they're now looking at 7 straight games. How many games do you need? Do you need for Bridgewater to play to come out of that saying, okay, I'm confident this guy is capable of carrying the team through the playoffs? Because
there's a tough line you got to walk here, though. You don't want to trash Keenum's confidence either.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we're starting to toe a very, very thin line in some respects, because let's just assume for a moment that Minnesota has got the division locked up by week 16. They don't need to start a Bridgewater come week 17. You don't need to. Let's say that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's
maybe
even
that's,
one less game. That's one less game.
Yeah, but maybe that's where you do start him.
Ooh.
You see what I'm saying? That's if you know you got everything locked up, you know, that's where maybe you do take a look and see where he's at in gameplay. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, I was asking you to put your coach's hat on there for a second, but anybody wants to jump in with us, 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964. We just crossed over the halfway point of the program for this evening already, believe it or not. And all we've done so far is just take a look at the two conferences. Let's say we go take a look real quick at the New Orleans Saints and the Buffalo Bills. You know, Brendan, I was looking over the box score for this game this afternoon. Now, we saw some of this game. We watched a little bit of this game. It was on one of the screens here on Sunday. And we know what the effect was. The effect of this game was an absolute fantasy nightmare for many people if you had to play against this. But when I looked at the box score, I didn't even realize how bizarre this game looks in the box score. All right. Now, to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, 47-10. All right. The New Orleans Saints beat the Buffalo Bills. All right. Now, 47-10. That was with the New Orleans Saints putting up almost 500 yards of offense by themselves, 482 yards of offense. Okay. That's crazy right there. But consider for a moment, 482 yards of offense. Drew Brees only contributed 184 of that passing. with no touchdowns and no interceptions. You would think with the score of 47-10, Drew Brees is coming out of this with a 4-touchdown day. Nope, not the case. Everything was on the ground. 298 rushing yards the New Orleans Saints put up. 131 from Mark Ingram. 106 from Alvin Kamara. An additional 48 from Trey Edmonds. And all three of those guys had 5 touchdowns. 3 touchdowns for Mark Ingram. A touchdown for Alvin Kamara. 1 for Trey Edmonds. Let's throw in one more. Drew Brees had a rushing touchdown himself because he had 6 yards on the ground. So every touchdown scored on the ground. This was absolute insanity. Every time I looked up, Mark Ingram was going into the end zone again. Where in the world has this been for not just this season? How about season after season after season? This is one of the weak links of the New Orleans Saints has been their ground game. This was insanity the other day. I really was. I was blown away by it.
Yeah, that's impressive output, you know, for a team that had Adrian Peterson as the big off-season signing and then couldn't find a way to get him the ball. You know, that's pretty impressive. You know, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the magic, you know, pill is that they're all of a sudden able to rush, but now it seems like whoever they give the ball to can go. So, I don't know. That may just be another player not fitting in with the coaching staff kind of deal. And, you know, very similar as we discussed earlier with Martellus Bennett. Maybe it's something like that with Adrian Peterson, you know, and the Saints. But, you know, you certainly can't complain about the running game now.
I contend and have now for the better part of a couple of weeks, particularly since Adrian Peterson has exited that team. I contend that Alvin Kamara has turned out to be more than what the New Orleans Saints ever anticipated. And I think
they're getting more out of Ingram than they are Kamara.
Well, that's because I think so many teams are keying on Kamara that what it's actually doing is it's opening it up. That's what I think's happening. But
Well, possibly. I don't know that Kamara's done enough to be the
They're using Kamara as a passing rusher as well. They're using him in passing situations. So, you know, you've got the dual threat with Kamara, where Ingram is pretty much, you know, hey, keep my feet terra firma. You know, I'm not going to go, you don't see Ingram catching the ball all that often. But you're right. I mean, Mark Ingram right now is the sixth leading rusher in the entire league. I'm trying to remember a season we saw Mark Ingram's name in the top 10. There were seasons in the past where I had Mark Ingram on my fantasy team, and it was a struggle. It was a struggle for the Saints to even have a ground game. That's why this is so bizarre.
Right.
You got to wonder whether it's something we're going to continue to see. It does seem to me this has been a concerted effort over the past, particularly 2 weeks. And interestingly enough, you know, you bring up Adrian Peterson. Meanwhile, Adrian Peterson suddenly, you know, where is he now? Out there with where'd he go? Raiders?
Arizona.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, he's been non-existent since week one.
With Arizona, he had two good games so far, but I think this week hurt him because he had a turnover from Sunday to Thursday, and I don't think that's at his age. That's something, you know, he's capable of at this point. And he didn't have the greatest game this week, but the week before they fed him the ball like 30 some times, and you know he was very effective. So, you know. I think Peterson can still play. I just don't think – I think, you know, there are certain players who don't like this, you know, the 4-day turnaround when you're doing, you know, Thursday night football. And I think, you know, especially players who get a little, you know, once they start getting older and in the league for a few years, I think that's a tougher transition, tougher recovery. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
The one of the things that I wanted to ask you about before we got off this game, because as I pointed out, we did have this game on. You know, we had this game on. We were keeping our eye on it. One of the things that you had pointed out a couple of weeks ago that you had said, you know, you wanted to get a better handle for the Buffalo Bills. Well, we got a chance to see a good deal of the Bills in not a very good effort, for sure, 47-10. What's your read on the Bills at this point, particularly coming off that game?
I haven't been able to get a good read on the Bills this year. You know, they seem to be able to be, you know, in a lot of games. I don't know that Tyrod Taylor is much more than a game manager. You've said that a couple times this season. I'm starting to kind of believe you. I never really had any reason to not believe you, but I'm like starting to buy into it a little more, maybe, is kind of where I'm thinking. So I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is on the Bills. You know, they don't seem to have the consistency. It doesn't seem like LeSean McCoy is what he used to be.
Yep.
But not totally ineffective either, you know. So, I don't know.
Up and down. I mean,
right.
Like, if I'm not mistaken, last week, not this past week, but the week before, LeSean McCoy was on fire. This
right.
week, 8 carries, 49
not so
yards.
Much. Right.
Yeah, and you got to wonder, I mean, is that game calling? Is that play calling? Is that game planning? You know, hey, we're just not going to run the ball. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's a little bit of, you know, that team can't play from behind. So if you got a team like the Saints going out there and jacking the scorer, well, there you go. You know what I mean? I think that's part of it. You know what I mean? I don't think they can play well from behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm just looking at this. They were down 17-3 at the half. They were down 37-3 after three quarters. 37-3.
I just don't think that's. I don't think that team's built to come back from behind, to come back from a big deficit. I think that's a tough answer for the Buffalo Bills right now. I think if they can play their game and be in the game the way they want to be in the game from the beginning, I think that's a little different of a story than, you know, having to play catch up. I just don't think they're built to play catch up.
Fair enough. And as we pointed out in taking a look at the conferences, nonetheless, at this particular moment, the Buffalo Bills are 5-4 and would be the final wild card team. But that's if the season were to conclude today. Remember, we still have 7 more games. So,
right.
But there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of people, and I've heard a lot of folks say that they think the Buffalo Bills are going to make the playoffs for the first time this season. I forget since when. What was it, 2009 or something like that? I forget when was the last time they made the playoffs. But go ahead.
I would be one that would say they're not. That's just my guess.
Okay.
My gut.
Okay.
I don't see them being able to hang when it comes to crunch time. You know, I don't know what the rest of their schedule looks like, but, you know, they probably have at least one game left with New England. They probably have some other, you know, I think the AFC East, you know, is playing a similar type of schedule. I think they probably have games against the AFC West left, you know, and I think the, you know, like a head game against the Raiders. I'm not sure if they played the Raiders yet. Like I said, I don't
know
the schedule in front of me, but.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just looking, as you're bringing that up, I'm just looking at the AFC East. Now, mind you, as I've already pointed out, we only have 7 games remaining for, let's see, all of these teams, with the exception of the Jets. The Jets are on bye this week. They've already played 10. The Jets are the only team so far that have played more division games than the rest. Get a load of this. 7 games remaining right now. The New England Patriots still have 5 division games remaining. They have 5. The Buffalo Bills.
They only played the Jets.
The Buffalo Bills have 4 remaining, And the Miami Dolphins have four remaining. So very, very interesting in that entire AFC East, very few division games have been played. And I'm looking around. I don't see any other division anywhere in the NFL that's like that. Very, very interesting.
So, they didn't seem to have the front load games. You know, the NFL seems to make it that, you know, they'll front load the start of the year. You have a couple and usually you have you'll end your season with a few, but probably didn't work out for the AFC East for whatever reason. They couldn't make the schedule happen that way. You know, and then of course you had the Patriots got the Super Bowl rematch conference rematch on the first week. So, you know, against the Chiefs, was that not a rematch of the conference championship? I think it was. And that's why they had that first game where they ended up losing miserably. So that might have cost the schedule makers a little bit.
Interesting. All right. So with a lot of conference play yet to come the AFC.
Division
in the
play.
AFC. Division play, rather, in the AFC East. For those of you that are out there, it's going to remind you a lot of the, it's going to remind you a lot of September in Major League Baseball, where all you get are the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. Take a look at the Pittsburgh Steelers real quick in the Indianapolis Colts. This was a game. This was another one. We had this one on the screens here, and we were tracking this one. And man alive, boy, was this a tough game to watch or what, Brandon? Ben Roethlisberger, 19 of 31, 236 yards, two touchdowns and one interception. When I looked at his numbers this afternoon, I actually came away from it going, you know what? His numbers are actually better than I thought they were going to be. Because every time I looked up, it seemed like he was throwing a ball incomplete. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like he was throwing incomplete passes, that he was coming up short. And really, it wasn't even long. He was coming up short on many cases. Or he was being rushed so badly that, you know, he was throwing the ball out of bounds or something just to get away. This was not a great performance. It was not a pretty game for the Pittsburgh Steelers at all, despite the fact they won this game. And as I pointed out in my intro to the show, it starts to make you wonder, you know, as I point out, I mean, we're 9 games in. We're 10 weeks into the NFL. You start to look around and you keep hearing people say, well, hey, this Pittsburgh Steelers team, they're gonna go to the Super Bowl. They're going to be the Super Bowl team. That wasn't a Super Bowl performance the other day against a really bad Colts team. Let's get this one straight. That Colts team is horrible. And there are two names that keep coming up, have been coming up almost from week one, week two of the season. Two names keep coming up of coaches that are going to get fired before the season's over. One of them is Pagano. I mean, this is not a good Colts team at all. Just filled with, racked with all kinds of problems and internal issues, and we know that. And boy, this Steelers team seemed to struggle. What'd you make of it?
Do you think though that Pagano's a bad coach? Because I don't. I think he's taking a bad rap of a poorly put together football team by, you know, the player personnel staff and general manager. I think this team just wasn't put together well. They didn't, you know, assess Andrew Luck's injury properly or whatever, you know, because, you know, I don't think anybody ever expected him not to play at all this season. So I don't know. That's a tough.
No, I don't think Pagano. Assessment. I don't think Pagano is. I will say this. I think McAdoo is. I think McAdoo is an offensive coordinator, and that's it. And I think he's out of his. I think he's out of his element.
I agree with you. But I think Pagano, if he is fired, will be snapped up by somebody. That would be my guess.
It might not be a bad thing for
matter
that
fact,
new team
he may
getting
follow,
him.
He may follow his former offensive coordinator in Arizona, because there's talk that this could be the last hurrah for that coach, and maybe he'll just go there.
And listen, like I said, it could be good for that team that picks him up, or it could be very good for Pagano. But Because, look, I mean, you know, it, to me, I think it's always ironic. The thing that you always hear from former coaches is when you are hired, the one thing you know for a fact that's going to happen is you're going to get fired. That's the one thing you know for a fact. You don't have any guarantees you're ever going to win a Super Bowl. You have no guarantees you're ever going to have a franchise quarterback. You have no guarantees you're going to, you know, even make it to the playoffs, go to a Hall of Fame, any of that. You have no guarantees of anything except you're going to get fired. So it's the most thankless job in the world, maybe with the exception of Bill Belichick. But
yeah, I don't think he's getting fired anytime soon.
I don't think he has anything. I don't think he has a damn thing to worry about.
Yeah, I think he's going to ride off into the sunset
as you pointed out, the other week, somebody else that just looks so completely cavalier, John Fox, just, you know, hey, do whatever you want with me. I don't give a damn.
Dude, hey, John Fox has been in the Super Bowl with two different teams. He's won it
exactly
with the Broncos.
Right.
He don't have anything. Right. You know what? Okay, fire me. You know, you guys, you had a, they dumped all their high priced, you know, skill players a year ago. So they're not giving him anything to work with either. He's
exactly
another coach
right.
that's kind of getting a raw deal in my book, but you know, whatever, you know, they'll figure it
yep.
out.
But what, having agreed with you on the whole Pagano thing, and obviously we're in agreement, this Colts team is just a mess. And frankly, I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon because I think that, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, I think it, somehow or another, Andrew Luck is going to find his way to a different team next year, which might only be great for a good team that gets him because the change of pace might be good for him
as
well.
I'm not so sure about that.
Of what, that he's going to get a new team or that it would be good for him?
That he's getting a new team. Because team that would have to get him would have to trade for him, and they'd have to take that contract. I don't know that any team's jumping up and down to trade for an Andrew Luck who's got shoulder problems, and he's in Europe getting, you know, potential stem cell treatments. Who knows? I don't know.
Well,
I don't think – I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know
what the market would be for him. That's all.
Well, we'll see. A lot of talk that the Colts are looking around at quarterbacks, particularly drafting
maybe
options.
They should be.
So, you know,
they should
we'll
looking
see.
For a lot of things. They got to figure out who the hell's making the draft.
Oh, well, we've been saying that about the Colts for a long, long time. But let's step this one over to the other side of the ball for a moment. What do you make of this Pittsburgh Steelers team? Because this was a game that, Brandon, you and I even talked about it, and if I'm not mistaken, I think did one of us have Pittsburgh in their pool? Pittsburgh was favored.
I picked them.
Pittsburgh was favored
them.
To win this game by 10 points or more.
Yep, I picked them.
And they just, I mean, when we had this game on, this was an ugly win. You know, listen, coaches will come out and say to you, a win's a win. A win's a win's a win. It doesn't make any difference. But damn, for a team that's supposed to be potentially maybe going to the Super Bowl, I don't know. Wasn't all that convincing, was it?
No. No, I don't know. I haven't been able to put my finger on Pittsburgh this year, to be honest with you. You know, they had the early issues with the anthem and who stood, who didn't stand, who came out of the locker room. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what to think of this team. You know, you think they're done and then, you know, they turn around and have a good game. So I'm of the opinion to say they're contenders or not contenders. I mean, by their record, they are. Can they play a game like they played against the Colts in the playoffs and win? I would say no. You're not going to play a game that sloppy and win in the playoffs, even against the wild card team.
Contenders are not for contenders. Well, you could say the same thing about the Carolina Panthers. I'm going to tell you right now, Carolina Panthers are not going to the Super Bowl. It's not happening.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, that's just my personal opinion. You know, and Carolina Panthers fans can call me up and yell me out if they want. I don't give a damn. 347-826-9964. You could say to me, Fred House, Mike, you're jumping the gun. I might be. But if you're going to try to tell me that this Carolina Panthers team is as good as the team that played 2 years ago, you're smoking dope, okay? Because that ain't true. This team, all right, fine. They looked great last night against a really bad Miami team. But boy, oh boy, I got to tell you something. That Carolina Panthers team, while they put up some big numbers and had a lot of there's nothing about them that I find in any way, I don't know, exciting. There's nothing about that team that I find exciting. There's nothing about the Carolina Panthers I find to be, I don't know, there's something missing from that team. I just can't seem to put my finger on it. But and I kind of get the same feeling with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They just kind of lack something, as you point out. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Well, if you look at them, you know, offensively, they got one of the best running backs in the game. They probably have the best receiver in the game.
Yep.
And they have, you know, Roethlisberger, who's been a good quarterback over the years. And, you know, it makes you wonder why they struggle a bad Colts team. That, you know, that's where I'm like, you know, they have a decent defense. They're not bad on, you know, they don't have any glaring weaknesses, but yet, you know, why are they not just taking this Colts team apart from the beginning?
Right.
You know, that's what the line said they should do. I mean, they were a 10.5 point favorite. That's telling me that the Pittsburgh Steelers should take this team apart from quarter one.
Yep.
Yet it didn't happen. So, I don't know. Is that a problem, or is that just, they're going to peak at the right time, maybe. Who knows? I don't know.
Right. And like I said,
and like you pointed out, there's 7 weeks left. So
right.
They got to work that
right.
out.
And I think I pointed out too in my intro, when you take a look at this game, like the Pittsburgh Steelers had, listen, you know, coach and crew is going to come out and they're going to say to me, Fred Housemichael wins a wins a win. Yeah, that's right. It is. And it's a W. That's fine. But, you know, those of us that sit back and we watch the games, we analyze the games, we talk about the games, we editorialize about the games, we know a win and a good win when we see one, and we know one where it just, boy, this shouldn't have been this difficult. And that's what you come away from with this particular situation. So was it a blip? Was it just a, hey, we had an off week, and, well, yeah, we should have whooped their, you know, we should have whooped them by 14 points, but, well, it didn't happen. So give us till next
week. They barely
watch.
Won the game, so, yeah.
Really? Thank you. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. See, I could sooner see, and this is where I'm starting to, you know, I'm starting to think, okay, is it going to be this week or is it going to be next week? You know, Thanksgiving week, where we're going to start to see, as you say, a team like the New England Patriots really start to take reins of this whole conference.
They kind of have been, haven't they?
I was going to say,
I mean,
as has been,
five wins in a row.
Well, that's what I was going to say. As has been pointed out now, you know, where it was a lot was made of their struggling defense early on in the season. They seem to have addressed some of that, and that seems to be gelling now a little bit better together. And now we're starting to see. So, you know, in a vacuum, are we going to start to really see, you know, and that talk about peaking, that's what you're talking about. You know, is this team going to, you know, are the New England Patriots going to peak at the right time? And perhaps maybe a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers just never get around to it. That's the whole thing. So, we mentioned the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota Vikings 38-30 the other day against the Washington Redskins. Case Keenum 21-29, 304 yards, 4 touchdowns. Yeah, he did have 2 interceptions, but wasn't sacked, and had 117 passer rating. This was a, 21 of 29. There was a stretch here, if I'm not mistaken, Brandon, where he didn't have a missed pass in the second half I think, for a period of time. He went for this ridiculous stretch in the second half where he went for like 12 for 12 or something ridiculous in the second half of the game. Just really, the Minnesota Vikings just shocked me. And you know, I'm guilty of it. A lot of people have been guilty of it. Well, they're taking advantage of the situation. Damn, they're doing more than that. I mean, let's get this one straight. This is a team that has been plugging quarterbacks in. That's what they're doing. They're plugging quarterbacks in. I mean, they plugged the quarterback in from last season on, and that guy all of a sudden, you know, just mysteriously disappeared with a knee injury of some nature that I've never gotten the full deal on, and now he's
well,
on
I
IR
think
for
it
the
was
rest
an,
of the season.
I think it's an Go old ahead. Injury that I think it was an so old injury that kind of got came back to haunt him, and he needed surgery on it, and that's all it was. I mean, let's face it, Sam Bradford, how many years did he go, you know, finishing the season on IR? So, you know, I think it was, you know, I don't think it was, he aggravated an old injury is the long story short with him. So, you know, but it is what it is. It's a shame because Bradford actually looked good, you know, when he did play,
yeah.
At least in the beginning. When he came back, he didn't look so hot, but, you know, I don't know what to say as far as that's concerned.
I frankly think
we may have seen the end of Sam Bradford, really.
We may have, but I frankly think the fact that this team is holding it together as well as they are, only one game behind the team with the best record in the entire NFL. You know, the Eagles are 8-1, they're 7-2. They're tied with, you know, all the other 7-2 teams in the league, which is considered to be the best in the entire. I think it's positively amazing. And then you throw in an absolutely incredible performance the other day by Adam Thielen, 8 receptions, 166 yards, and a touchdown. Everything that was thrown this guy's way, he caught. There were only 4 incomplete passes that were thrown in that guy's direction. I mean, it was insane. The guy was he's just a beast. Honest to God, Thielen is an absolute beast this year. Who saw it? I mean, who saw that one? I wish I had. I'm not that good when it comes to drafting. I should have seen this guy. Adam Thielen right now is the 3rd ranked receiver in the entire league. With how many yards does he have? 793 total yards. He's less than 100 yards from Antonio Brown. And mind you, okay, no, I was going to say, no, that's the one below it. Okay. Oh, no, hold on. Let's see. On 56 receptions. I was reading the wrong number. But how many touchdowns? Only 2. He only has 2 touchdowns. Interesting. And had one the other, and one of them was just the other day. So, but Thielen was just, wow. I mean, you know, every time we looked up, it was Thielen.
Yep.
Stephon Diggs had a great day as well. Stephon Diggs had a great day. Touchdown himself, 4 receptions, 78 yards, and a touchdown. And so this Minnesota Vikings team just keeps rolling on, and fully taking advantage, as we said, now 2 full games in front of the Detroit Lions, who are at 5-4. Where did I want to go to? I'm off my outline here. Let me see where we went. I want to go take a look. I want to go take a look at this Dallas Cowboys. You get your thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys here for a second. You know, I watched the game with a good deal of interest for an obvious couple of reasons. You know, one, I got Dak Prescott as my fantasy quarterback, and then, you know, of course, they're in my division, and, you know, I want Dak to play well. I want him to get me my fantasy numbers, but I want them to lose. At the same time, I picked them to win. because, I mean, look, we're going up against the Atlanta Falcons. Boy, the Atlanta Falcons, 27-7 over the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott wasn't horrible, but he certainly didn't look like the Dak Prescott we have seen at certain times during the course of the year. 20 of 30, 176 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. And without Zeke Elliott, boy, they just really never got the ground game going. Alfred Morris, 53 yards on 11 carries. Prescott had 42 yards on 6 carries himself. Darren McFadden had minus 2 yards. So that seems to be a waste. Rod Smith really probably should be the running back too. That probably should be the case, because that's the guy I keep hearing is really probably will be the guy that takes over for Alfred Morris at some point or another. But your impressions of this game without Ezekiel Elliott, you made the comment early on that you feel that they should be able to, the lack of Zeke Elliott. I agree with you. They should. Was this just, hey, it's the first game, we don't have the guy, we kind of thought we were going to. I'm trying to think, when did the word come down? The word came down on Wednesday, maybe, that they weren't going to have him?
Thursday.
All right. So, yeah. You know, all along and all season long, they had been preparing with him. And so now all of a sudden they got to change everything up and they don't have him. I mean, could that have been what it was? Was this just a blip? Or is this team truly a one-man team?
Well, I don't know if it's a distraction or what. I don't think he's a one-man team because Dak Prescott has proven he can play. I mean, he's been effective. He's looked good. I think he has been a distraction. And I think that's legitimate. And this whole Dak the Cowboys would have been so much better off taking this 6-game suspension from week one on and be over it by now. But I think the way they fix it is they gotta basically treat Alfred Morris as their feature back, and they gotta establish a run game. You know, basically the same formula. You know, make the team stop the run like they do with Zeke, and then Dak Prescott can have his way, you know, with the passing game. I don't understand why they have to change the formula. It's a good formula. Why mess with it? You know? And I think it's still doable. I mean, this team is always, everybody always says they have the best line in football. Okay. Well, let's run Alfred Morris behind the line, you know, or, you know, if Rod Smith is a guy, run him, you know, right, whatever, but, you know, pick, you know, do the same formula that works for you. Just because you don't have Ezekiel Elliott. Okay. So maybe you don't have, maybe you're, you know, you got 1A or 2 in there. That, whatever. That's going to happen from time to time in the NFL, you know? So you just fix it and move on. You know, that's what you got to do. Don't change your formula just because your guy's out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I've seen too much from Dak Prescott to put this completely at the feet of Dak Prescott. Now, you know, I think one of the things that I did come away from on Sunday's game is recognizing how big the ground game had become for the Dallas Cowboys. That's one of the things you come away from. I mean, you know, when Dak Prescott is picking up, or when Ezekiel Elliott, rather, is picking up, 110, 120 yards a game, not just once, but almost consistently. Well, you know, I hear what you're saying. Look, run the same formula. I don't know if Alfred Morris is going to get you consistently 100 to 110 a game. You may have to do it by
committee. If their line is good as they say it is, they should be able to do it. I'm just saying, he's proven. Alfred Morris is not like an unknown commodity. He's been a Pro Bowl player for the Redskins and a featured back before. You know, he's kind of been on the sidelines in Dallas now for a couple seasons. So I can't imagine that, you know, tired, you know what I mean? Sound like he's overworked. I'd say ride him.
Well, I guess
we'll see. I mean, well, time will tell. Obviously, you know, we'll see what the Cowboys choose to do game plan wise against the Eagles.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, here we go. A big game coming up, you know,
Sunday night. Yep.
Sunday night in Dallas. So, you know, this game against the Falcons was on the road. So, you know, we'll be at home. Right now, Eagles are a 3-point favorite. And, you know, so that certainly is looking like an Eagles game. So, but talk about that one, I'm sure, more on Thursday night. And then just real quick, last but not least, the Carolina Panthers. And we brought it up a little bit earlier, Carolina Panthers and the Miami Dolphins. Carolina Panthers, 45-21. That takes Carolina's record to 7-2, drops Miami down to 4-5. Jay Cutler was absolutely horrible, Brandon. I mean, this guy, you know, I haven't had a chance to hear it, but apparently, believe it or not, and if it's any good, if it's really, really good, I may just have to steal parts of it and perhaps maybe even bring it on Thursday night. But and not that I'm a big fan of his, but apparently, Stephen A. Smith on ESPN went off on Jay Cutler today. And I don't frankly blame him, because Jay Cutler is horrible. And I don't know why in the world Miami would have ever thought this was a good idea. I mean, I would rather them go. Their backup is Matt Moore, is it not?
Yep.
Well, I'd sooner them run the entire season with Matt Moore. It would be more enjoyable to watch than watching Jay Cutler. 22 of 37, 213 yards, 2 touchdowns, an interception. That doesn't tell the story of Jay Cutler, though. You had to see the game. You just got to see the game. You got to watch Jay Cutler. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's the body language. It's the I don't give a damn.
I'm getting paid $13 million. That's what it is.
Oh, my God. All right. Anyhow, that's all we got time for this evening. We ran around. We tried to touch on as much as we possibly did. Listen.
I don't know. Was there a team we didn't actually bring up tonight?
Was there a team we didn't mention?
Oh,
was there
maybe not the New York Giants. I don't think we mentioned the Giants.
I don't think I said – I was going to say, I don't think I said Chicago Bears. Did I say Chicago Bears?
No, we did. We talked about John Fox.
We did mention John Fox, but we didn't mention him by his team. We didn't say Chicago Bears. But you know what? I think we did mention every – yes, we did. We did. I think we got them all in. There we go. All right. I'm very proud of us. Very good. Nice job. We got to come back and do that again next week. We will come back and do that again next week. In the meantime, though, before then, you want to be here on Thursday night, because you've heard us already reference that, yeah, we've got our picks of the week coming up. And look, we're going into week 11, and you just heard me break it down, and Brandon and I both break it down. Hey, it's now starting to get real. It's serious now. This is for the marbles. So you can bet that whatever games we highlight on Thursday night will be good ones and really important ones. So you're going to want to be here for that, plus everything else that we get into. You can imagine there'll be a little bit of there'll be a lot of NFL chit chat. There'll be a little bit of NHL chat, because we will have Matt and Mike Appel back with us, and of course our good buddy Chris Davis from FT Sports Podcast will be joining us on Thursday night, as he has this fall on Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time, for our Frat House Sports Show. I think it's number 318, maybe 318 or 319. Anyhow, I'm losing count of them. Oh, it's a bad thing. All right. Anyhow, many thanks to everybody that's been listening in this evening. We always have a lot of fun doing this program and breaking everything down. So many thanks to everybody that's listening in this evening. And well, hey, I don't know what you're watching, but hey, whatever it is you're doing, get out there and enjoy your sports. And we'll catch you here on Thursday night.